Welcome to Todd and Preston's Drive Time Chat. The car ride is imaginary, but the conversation is real.
Greetings, discerning listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Discerning Geeks Portal, the podcast that's in search of some good TV that's not going to get canceled after only one or two seasons. I am your host, Todd. I'm barely working right now, and joining me as always is someone who might be working enough for two or three people at the moment. It's Preston. Preston, how's it going?
Pretty good. You know, it's the final rush to tax season, and my God, we're really pulling it in. I appreciate all my customers. If you're listening, if you're not, Todd, thank you for being a customer this year. Appreciate everyone supporting Stillman's Tax Service, and yeah, let's hit the road and have some fun.
Yeah, and thank you for putting up with my procrastination, because I got my information to you later than I meant to. If it hadn't been you, I think I might have gotten it even later, because I think I've done that with my previous tax service before. They probably were not fond of me, but so yeah, thank you for turning around very quickly.
Oh, no. It's a simple return. You know, Todd does well. Todd has his own spreadsheet, so it makes all of these things quite simple. I believe you had the smallest return totals of the season. So you did a good job.
Oh, okay. All right. You're good.
Yeah, I mean, by that, I mean your refund and tax owed were the smallest of the season, not that your income was the smallest of the season. That would be rude. Okay.
It might be the smallest this year. Yeah, so tonight is another Drive Time special with just me and Preston for now. We're waiting to see if Dave can join for a possible second episode to record tonight. So for now, it's just the two of us. And we thought we'd go over a few miscellaneous topics. Preston, any preference on which one to start with? If not, I kind of have an idea what might be the best one.
I feel like, Todd, you can sort of name your poison here. I know I have one pet topic that we'll get to a little bit later. But yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, I was thinking the best one to start off with would be X-Men 97. If for no other reason than that's the one that definitely both of us are kind of familiar with. At the moment we're recording, I've seen four episodes and you've seen two, right?
Yes. Okay. I am behind, as I say, it is tag season. That has been my sole focus in life. So I'm behind on my cartoons, which is strange, but, I've greatly enjoyed this, reboot of one of the cornerstones of my childhood, X-Men, the animated series. The first two episodes, well, the first one in general was a good reintroduction to the X-Men. Had you not interacted with the franchise at all, or just wanted to say, hey, here's your reintroduction. Here's all your favorite X-Men and they're back. The plot seems to be Charles is dead, so how do you captain a ship of people that would not get along in any other instance other than the fact they all share the unfortunate fate that they are hated by the rest of the world because they actually have powers and are special, and everyone else is not. With that in mind, Todd, how did you like the... you know, our reintroduction to the main cast. Did anyone stick out to you in general?
I don't know about anyone sticking out, but one thing that I'm kind of a little bit surprised by is that I am interested in this, and I am kind of making this right now one of my main TV shows, which right now there's not a whole lot on TV for me. But it is one that I do check out soon after if it's released. And the reason I say that surprising is I was not a fan of the original X-Men cartoon. And I know that's blasphemy because I know a lot of people love it. A lot of people love the theme song. I never really liked the theme song. And I'm not sure exactly why I didn't get into the original cartoon because I have always enjoyed the X-Men. I think my biggest complaint was that I didn't like some of the animation and I also didn't like some of the voice casting back then. And to be honest, that's still a problem to a certain extent. I'm not sure what some of these characters should sound like, but what they do sound like either is annoying or just doesn't seem to fit. And I think that if I understand correctly, some of the voice cast is the same now in 97 as in the original series. And I think the two voices that have always annoyed me were the ones for Rogue and Gambit. they just get on my nerves. And I'm not sure I like the way those two characters are written either, but everybody else is okay. I'm not sure if the voice actor for the Beast is the same as the one in the original cartoon, but I think he might have been the ones that I didn't like back then and I do now. If it is the same actor, then maybe I don't have an excuse for not liking him back then. While that's still a little bit of annoyance, I'm not allowing it to ruin it for me, and I am kind of getting into the episode so far.
Well, good, good. As I have done the barest of research, I believe you are correct that most of the actors that are playing the X-Men in X-Men 97 are the same actors from 1996. You can definitely tell in certain characters that their voice actor has gotten a little older, and actresses, but, you know, it's not that much of a throw off. I think the dialogue is just a little stilted. For some people, like Storm is very dramatic and like operatic in her delivery of her lines. And I think that's really to play up, you know, she was African royalty basically before she joined the X-Men. So she was taught a very proper operatic and dramatic kind of English. That's one that sticks out, and certainly the main focus, at least for this season, seems to be Scott Summers. And Cyclops, you know, everyone has their opinion of Cyclops. There are some people that love him, and he has his fans because he is a brilliant strategist and leader. Oftentimes, he just comes off as a dick to me. I don't know if you share that opinion or got that out of the series thus far. But again, I might be biased because I'm coming at this as a Wolverine fan. And certainly Wolverine and Cyclops were they not somehow bound by the shared interest in one redhead, they would likely beat each other to death.
Yeah, for me, Cyclops, I wouldn't say he's a dick or totally unlikable. I think from my perspective, he's always been a little bit of Captain Cardboard. Do you understand that reference?
Oh, yeah, no.
That's a reference from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one time when the vampire Spike was insulting one of Buffy's boyfriends. Yeah, he's always been a little bit of Captain Cardboard to me.
Wow, you calling someone Captain Cardboard is like Star Wars calling Star Trek a critically uneven franchise.
But I think that so far, at least in the first couple episodes, they've tried to undo that by trying to make him, I was about to say extra cool, but that might be going a little bit too far, but cooler than you might expect for Cyclops. Because he doesn't have one of the most interesting powers in the world for the X-Men, especially for the person who's supposed to be the leader. I mean, he really doesn't have any kind of enhanced strength or agility or stuff like that. He basically just has a weapon, and it looks like a laser, but it doesn't act like a laser.
Todd wanted to clarify that it's a natural weapon. He knows Cyclops shoots concussive blasts out of his eyes, not laser beams out of his visor. He just didn't say it well, because he's a doofus.
I don't know. His mutant power is a little bit oddball, and so for him, of all people, to be the leader of the X-Men has always been a little bit weird, and especially since he does come off as a little bit of a bland character sometimes. Like I said, the cartoon is doing a better job of making him seem like a better character so far.
It's fair that he's the central focus of the episodes that I've seen thus far. Certainly, they have a new mutant in the fold, kind of taking the place of Jubilee. And let me make sure that I can say his name correctly.
Are you talking about Sunspot?
Sunspot, yes.
Well, I say that because I don't know his actual name either. I just know that he's the guy that gets the code name Sunspot in the comics. I think in the cartoon, he hasn't gotten his code name yet. But
his regular name is Roberto da Costa.
And he kind of comes off as a douche, and he's going to be the love entrance for Jubilee, to the absolute ire of my inner child who had a kind of a crush on Jubilee.
Oh.
You know, that shouldn't affect me, you know, judging the performance or anything like that. But yeah, he's just kind of the, you know, spoiled teenage 90s douchebag because his parents are rich, and he kind of plays that off and everything. But yeah, what has been really great about this series is the action set pieces and just the animation that goes into those action set pieces is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like there's a scene, I believe in the first episode, where they're going to that Sentinel manufacturing wreckage yard or whatever it is. And you know, the plane, the Blackbird gets ripped open by a Sentinel, and then, you know, everyone kind of falls out of the plane and they're beating up the Sentinel and like skydiving at the same time. And everyone has their own little motions and actions. And Wolverine just kind of tanks landing into a giant pile of sand after, I believe, either Storm or Rogue catches him. And like Cyclops stops himself by shooting his laser eyes down the sand, creating like a kind of glass situation for him to land on.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. And then, you know, Storm gets to show off the full might of her powers in that same episode, where she gets to control a gigantic thunderstorm tornado situation. And like the sand kind of goes to glass, and you know, she's delivering this monologue of very dramatic importance, and then she just fries the Sentinel with this gigantic lightning bolt, which leads to the big reveal at the end of the episode, where Magneto's back because he's found Charles's will, and now he's in control of the X-Men. Dun, dun,
dun. Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about that, because I'm sure that that's probably happened at some point in the comics. Who knows? Maybe even multiple times, as long as the X-Men have been around. But I don't know. In some ways, he's not that bad a leader, because he's leading the X-Men, and all Magneto cares about is mutants, not normal people. So he's doing a halfway decent job of leading the X-Men. It's just... the X-Men are still there to protect everybody, including normal people. So is Magneto really the right choice? And why did Charles make that choice? I'm not sure that the reason is clear yet. So it does feel weird. Yeah, I'm not sure that I like that. So far, they're doing okay with it by kind of not making him the adversary that he was, but he's kind of accepting his role and kind of running with it. But I can't help but wonder, how long is that really going to last?
In the comic, or at least in Marvel Comics, there are three statements that everyone makes as to if this happens, some big event is coming. Number one is if Mr. Fantastic is off world. If he's in space, something big is going to happen. Number two is Charles Xavier dead or not? Because that means also that something big is going to happen, because Charles Xavier holds basically the world of mutants together from just declaring all-out war. And number three, has anyone seen Doctor Doom or Norman Osborn lately? Because if not, they have a big plan and something's going to happen. I guess with it being Doom and Osborn, it could be three and four, but since it's the same thing, people combine it into one thing. In the comics, yes, Magneto does usually get some kind of X-Men together after Charles's death. Usually it's out of trying to honor his friend's legacy in some of the issues that I've read, and also just the fact that once Charles is dead, everything just starts blowing up, and like the government immediately tries, okay, Charles Xavier is gone. He was the one good one. We're terrified of these people, so let's go ahead and round them up and, you know, do the whole Nazi thing. Yeah. Which, again, Magneto lived through the actual Holocaust, and so he's not exactly fond of that reality. But yeah, it usually ends up that Magneto runs some kind of X-Men faction after the death of Charles Xavier.
Yeah.
Normally speaking, when he does run an X-Men faction in the comics, he's usually paired with Rogue. That's an interesting dynamic that they sort of hinted at, but didn't really dive into in the show, at least in the one episode where I've seen them interact.
Yeah, and even in the next two episodes, there's not a whole lot of that. There's still more hinting going on.
Right.
But there's almost a question as to whether that connection is romantic or not. I don't know if that's a red herring or if they're actually going to go there. I hope they don't go there. I think that would be weird. But it is a are they or aren't they kind of question still going on as of episode four.
If Magneto was around 7 to 9 years old, around the World War II time frame, he'd be in his late 50s or early 60s in 1997. A Google search for Rogue's age shows most fans assume she's in her 20s. So, Magneto is probably 2 to 3 times the age of Rogue. That would make it at least a May, December, romance, if not an April, next January, romance. Either way, gross.
At least 50-50 in the comics, Rogue does end up with Magneto briefly in most of these interactions.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Because again, Magneto is a strange character where he like has a very fluid sexuality in the comics. But 9 times out of 10, it's either Mystique or Rogue that he kind of ends up romantically paired with.
Yeah.
And since Mystique isn't around right now in the comics, it would be Rogue, which also leads to the weird genealogy of the X-Men. So Rogue is also Mystique's daughter, mm-hmm. in a way,
yeah.
which is weird. And Mystique is also Nightcrawler's mother,
mm-hmm.
which is also weird.
Yeah.
And there again, it may be that Mystique and Rogue were mother-daughter in one timeline. They got retconned during one event and then, you know, goes from there. So certainly comics are weird, timelines are fluid, and in the X-Men, anyone can end up with anybody else. And I believe that's kind of the premise for this particular season.
Some cursory research would seem to reveal that Mystique, at least in the comics, is only an adoptive mother of Rogue, but she is the biological parent of Nightcrawler. My wording there is intentional and involves spoilers. Anyway, Rogue and Nightcrawler are not biologically related, but one source said they do consider each other siblings.
Well, all right, so speaking of time and genealogy, you've seen two episodes, I've seen all four that have been released so far. Some people with the press and people who have YouTube channels and stuff like that, they got to see the first three episodes early. And one of the channels on YouTube that I follow is Beyond the Trailer with Grace Randolph. And she was hinting at some of her reviews that she felt like the first few episodes, especially the three that she got to see ahead of time, were going at a very fast pace. And I was not totally sure what she was talking about, because I felt like each episode itself wasn't going that fast. But now I kind of see what she means, because in the third episode, the one that you haven't seen, I won't give away any spoilers or anything, but that episode covered something that I think did happen in the comics that has a little bit to do with genealogy. And it did go fast. And the reason I say it went fast is that it dropped several references that I know come from the comics, but it didn't bother explaining those things. And so that's what I mean by going fast. It's almost like something that probably took several issues of the comics to cover, they did in one 30-some minute episode. And so they were just like dropping little hints, and anybody who is familiar with the comics could say, oh yeah, I get that reference. But then the cartoon wasn't helping you understand where those references come from. And so there were some things in episode 3 that felt a little random. It's like, why did that person use that name? And why did this happen? And it mostly had to do with the names that a particular character was calling himself or herself. And it's like, Why? It just seemed like some things were coming out of nowhere. So
they brought back Mr. Sinister, didn't they?
That was part of it.
Yeah, Mr. Sinister. There are tiers to X-Men villains, and Mr. Sinister is near the top tier of X-Men villains. I would say he is the old. I want to say he's number two. Number one X-Men villain is obviously Apocalypse. Mr. Sinister, if they brought him back, things are going to get weird.
Yeah.
Mm. And they're going to get weird fast because now not only have you introduced the whole timeline situation, but you've introduced cloning. Because mm-hmm. Mr. Sinister, what does he do? Well, he plays with genes and DNA, and he's very big into, I'm going to create the perfect organism and then become them. And Mr. Sinister, at least in the show back in the day, he was really big on Morph. Morph dies in the original show in the first couple of episodes. I want to say the second episode, if not the first episode of the original show. Morph is killed off screen, but it Wolverine tries to save him and can't. So that's like a big deal. And then later on in the series, they go to Mr. Sinister's island where he's got like dinosaur people and, you know, like the furry tiger dude. You know, Mr. Sinister has been using Morph's DNA to clone and replicate and fill in holes in his work. So Morph is very important to Mr. Sinister. And if they've brought back Mr. Sinister, that means you cannot trust anything you see on camera, you know, until you get confirmed, is this really that person or not?
Yeah.
Because he can clone everybody.
Yeah.
That is a risk because you can, if you establish that no character can ever be trusted to be that character with Mr. Sinister just going out here being clone happy, then you've got a gigantic problem with the audience just being like, oh my God, this is just too much stuff. I don't understand who anyone is. I'm done. So hopefully this was just Mr. Sinister exists. He's not going to clone everybody. But he does clone people. So, yeah, we've shown him. We've established how bad he is. But we've effectively dealt with him by the end of this episode. So he is not this confusing, overarching sword of Damocles that could stab the series in the heart.
Yeah, and you're definitely on to something. I'm not sure I want to elaborate because it could be a spoiler for the episode that you haven't seen. And right. Then as far, and that is episode 3. And like I said, that's the thing. It takes place all in one episode. Now, one good thing is I'm looking at the run times of all the episodes, and they are 32 minutes. And I can't remember, but I'm assuming that in the original cartoon, they were probably in 30-minute blocks, and you take away commercials, and they were probably 22 minutes. So these feel like they're able to pack in a little bit more, and maybe that's why they feel fast-paced, is maybe because they have a little bit more time to put in an episode, and so they pack in more when we may be used to getting this in a smaller time period. And episode 4 is technically 2 episodes in one, because I'm seeing the combined running time for episode 4 is 29 minutes, but it technically has 2 titles. So I guess the actual episode 4 and what would have been episode 5 both came in so short that they decided to kind of combine them and release them in one day. And so even together, they're still only 29 minutes total. And I'll just be really vague on this. It's not hugely spoilery, but episode 4 has to do with the Mojoverse. And even when I collected the X-Men comics, I was never huge in the Mojoverse. So I wasn't crazy about episode 4. And
the Mojoverse is Mojo himself is a very disappointing villain. Like, it's supposed to be taking a shot at, like, you know, commercial television and being kind of like this weird couch potato obsessed programming director, I guess would be the best way to describe Mojo. But the Mojo verse and Mojo himself it's a weak plot to me.
Yeah.
Mojo isn't the best villain. Like, I don't care. Like, if the X-Men beat him up, great. He's out of the way. But like, I feel like more Mojo, really. But I don't know. I guess people really liked him, but those people aren't me.
Yeah, you would think that I would like the whole TV aspect, but there's something about, and I don't even mind him kind of having his own weird universe, quasi-universe of his own. You'd think I would like that, but I think the fact that he's just this big blob character and the way he says things and his voice. And I don't know, the overall weirdness of the character is what I think I don't like. And so, yeah, for some reason I've never liked the Mojoverse. And then episode 5 is a little bit more normal and kind of revisit something that happened in the first couple episodes. And I think it's even based on something that happened in the comics, because I believe the title for that is similar to a title of something that happened in the comics. So they're using the comics for inspiration for these things. The very end of the second part of episode four, I'm not sure what it means or where it's going. Some of these last couple episodes have kind of delved into the psychedelic and the psychobabble and even demonic stuff. And I'm not sure I totally like that direction. So hopefully we get a little bit more grounded here soon in episode five or six. But overall, I would say that, I like the show and the direction. And I'm, even though I still have some issues with some of the voices, and it's not that they're bad actors or have bad voices, they just don't seem to fit. But I'm kind of dealing with it a little bit better now than I did with the original series for some reason.
I mean, no, that's fair. I think, you know, at least in the original series, if you go back and watch it today, the dialogue is so weirdly laid out and delivered. The scenes are just so difficult to kind of understand. At least one that kind of sticks out in my mind is after like the first couple of episodes where they like have where they break into the Sentinel mutant registration building and, you know, things go wrong and everything. Morph's dead and Logan's like working it out by doing karate by himself, right? And Jean comes in to comfort him. And Logan takes that opportunity to try and be like, yeah, Jean, I really love you. I was like, ugh, bruh. So, I don't know. If you go back and you watch that scene is just very off-putting. But I've always felt that, like, Logan carries too much of a torch for Jean Grey anyway. He has much better, you know, lovers and love interests in the comics. Like, Yoshida, Princess Yoshida, she's a great love interest for him. I think Storm ends up a love interest for him for a little bit that really worked out. Also, there's someone on Weapon X that was a love interest for him. She shows up in the cartoon for a little bit, and I'm blanking on her name. But she's a better love interest than Jean. I think this whole forcing a love triangle into a TV show is extremely 90s. And yes, it was popular at the time. Yes, you know, nerd TV still does it today, but I'm so over the love triangle aspect of every, like, all media, movies, TV, I'm done with it. Oh. Like, you know, I'm just done with the love triangle. It's a played out crutch, you know, for a will they, won't they thing, because, I won't get into the Moonstruck thing, but I just feel like love triangles are played out, overused. It's done. Let's not do this in X-Men.
Okay. All right. Well, we're already at the 30-minute mark. We still only talked about one topic. So real quick, anything else you want to say about X-Men before we move on to a few other things?
Oh, no. X-Men's great. You should watch it. Go watch it. If you have Disney Plus, go watch it.
Yep, I would agree.
At the time of editing this, Todd has now seen episode 5, and episode 6 is about to come out. No spoilers, but Todd said that episode 5 is pretty epic and shocking. It's only the halfway point, and it feels like a season finale. If you're still catching up, don't let anyone spoil you on this huge episode.
Okay, so just in general, anything else that you're watching right now?
I'm watching Shogun, and I'm having fun with it. Certainly, I'm not current with it, but I have seen the first couple of episodes, and they've been really good. You know, it's a very interesting exploration of post-discovery Japan, and an emperor is dead, and what does that mean in the post-Commodore Perry discovery? And, you know, Japan has gunpowder, and what does that mean for Japanese society? Japan is also exposed to brash Western dogs, and what does that mean for Japanese society? All of this is a really wonderful story, acted beautifully. Everyone involved is just knocking it out the park in this thing. It's mostly in Japanese, so you have to read subtitles and pay attention. But everyone's acting their ass off, and it's just a great time.
Yeah, I've heard that too, because I haven't started watching it yet, but I've heard a lot of great reviews, and that's one of the things that's been mentioned. Yeah, it's not one of those casual watches. You do have to pay attention because of the subtitles. Some of the other things I know about it is I think I've heard that there's kind of like a three-way political triangle, a political triangle, but not a love triangle. Maybe a hate triangle. I don't know.
Here's the difference is that in Shogun, this is about, like, you get the sense that this is about the future of the whole country. Mm-hmm. You get the sense like these are political machinations that are made for an entire country. There's gravitas to this. In love triangles, it's just like, oh my God, can the one that has to just make a choice, can that, like, if it's one girl, can she just pick one? Like, that's how it normally works. The girl just picks one. It doesn't go on for months.
In terms of the political triangle, aren't there two other countries that are kind of dealing with Japan diplomatically?
So Spain's in here.
Yeah.
It's Spain and England. England just shows up with our main character, and he's mostly by himself, but it's Spain. It's the Spanish, the Spaniards. And I believe the second kind of angle to this triangle is Catholicism in general. Okay. Like there's the Spanish merchants, basically, and they have their own agenda, and Catholicism, like the Catholic Church and representatives of the church, have their own agenda. And then here comes this English dude showing up talking about the Church of England and bringing Catholics versus Protestants to a new realm.
Yeah, I had heard that. I couldn't remember if it was Spain or Portugal, but I'd heard that one of those kind of Iberian Peninsula countries was another country that kind of had influence over Japan at the time, or at least was negotiating with them or something. And I didn't realize that one of those countries ever had dealings with Japan. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but for some reason, I guess I never would have made that particular connection. And so I thought that was intriguing. And then one of the main characters, I don't remember the actress's name, but she's the same actress from Monarch, the Legacy of Monsters TV show. And, oh man, such a beautiful actress and awesome at performing too. She's in this.
You're thinking of actress Anna Sawai. One of her other credits is as teenage Kiriko in the 2009 martial arts film, Ninja Assassin, which was written by, of course, J. Michael Straczynski, creator of Babylon 5. There's your Babylon 5 reference, folks.
So predictable and stupid.
Todd wanted me to point it out, despite the fact he hasn't seen the movie himself, because he's a doofus.
And she plays a character that is a Christian, which is, I guess, controversial in Japan, with them having, you know, a different religion and everything. And so I'm kind of intrigued by whatever that character might represent. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to give it a try. I'm putting it off for some reason, and I'm sure once I start watching, I'll feel stupid for not watching it sooner.
She's good at her job, and she's good looking while being excellent at her job. That's really all you can want for someone on television.
Yes. Yeah. Her performance is the main thing. Her looks are just a bonus. Let me.
Yeah.
Anna Sawai was recently a guest on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. While Colbert appears to be a happily married man, he acted a little bit like he had a crush on Anna. He seemed very impressed that she's fluent, not just in modern Japanese, but also learned an older, more formal version of the language for the TV show's time period of the early 1600s. She also learned calligraphy, archery, and horseback riding. While waiting in between scenes, she also learned to knit, and she gave Stephen Colbert a knitted case for his glasses. Okay, now I have a crush on her too.
Shogun, check it out.
Greetings, discerning listeners. This is Todd the Editor cutting in maybe semi-briefly. As if I don't have plenty of other things I need to be doing, including finishing the edit on this two-part drive time, I did start watching Shogun. I meant to just sample it, but it was good enough to keep going, so now I've binge-watched the first 9 episodes, with the finale of this limited series airing this coming week. On the good side, the production quality is amazing. Locations, cinematography, sets, costumes, and special effects are all movie quality. There is a natural disaster that is depicted in one of the middle episodes, and I don't know what combination of practical full-size effects, miniatures, and CGI they had to use, but it looks effectively realistic. It's very interesting to get a taste of feudal Japanese culture, and it's incredible how much the story gets set up in just the first two or three episodes, leaving all the other episodes for twists, turns, and even further development. The performances are all great. I already talked a little bit about how much I enjoy Anna Sawai. She's terrific in this, and so is the rest of the cast. While I don't like his character, and I don't think he's meant to be likable, I was happy to see Louis Ferreira in a few episodes, coincidentally playing a Portuguese ship captain named Ferreira. Louis Ferreira played Colonel Everett Young in Stargate Universe, one of my all-time favorite shows. He came to DragonCon the year people were doing the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, and sure enough, he dumped a pitcher of ice water on himself during one of the panels. I got a picture with him in the Walk of Fame, and he was wearing some kind of green Space Ranger type costume, and we both gave a thumbs up to the camera. A cousin of mine got that photo off my Facebook page and had it printed on a coffee mug that she gave me for Christmas that year. So every time I see him pop up in something, I think, hey, I'm on a coffee mug with that guy.
Oh my God, nobody cares.
I think this may have already been mentioned, but because of the frequent use of Japanese spoken word and English subtitles, this is not a casual watch where you can multitask a lot while it's on. Also, this is a huge cast with a lot of names, faces, factions, and allegiances to keep up with. Also, this show can be pretty violent sometimes. Much of Japanese culture can be fascinating, but the occasional scenes of seppuku, ritual suicide, can be uncomfortable. With the exception of those scenes, an occasional beheading, and one use of artillery in a middle episode, gore is thankfully kept to a minimum. Nothing is ever perfect, so here are a couple quibbles. The lighting done for night scenes is sometimes a little too realistically dark. That's especially true in an early episode, which includes both a land battle and a naval scene, which are both so dark that I kept having to rewind to tell what was going on, and after a while I just had to give up and move forward. I successfully avoided spoilers and refrained from researching feudal Japan ahead of time, but when something shocking happened in the final moment of episode 9, I first had to look up whether what I just saw really was what I thought I just saw, and then researched further to see what happened in real life. This is always a danger when watching movies or TV shows supposedly based on real people or events. Whenever you find out how much creative liberty the writers and producers took with the story, you find out it's more than you expected. That was always a disappointment with just about every season of The Crown, and it's no different here. Based on a 1975 novel, which was already adapted as another miniseries in 1980, this story changes all of the names of all of the main characters, events or locations are shifted around, several key characters in the story never met in real life, etc. So, as good as this show is, and as much as it might accurately present Japanese culture and at least the gist of certain historical events, don't go into this show expecting to learn a whole lot, at least not what actually truly happened. It's still an amazing show, I don't regret binging it, and I'll still complete my watch with the upcoming 10th and final episode, despite episode 9's shocking final moment, which is also kind of disappointing. But just go into this show knowing it's a drama first, maybe a political thriller second, and a historical reenactment third or fourth. Okay, back to the recording. And then, I know I've mentioned on probably two or three different episodes, The Rookie, which I know is not a very geeky TV show, but that's a cop show. But it also has some lighthearted aspects, and I really like the cast, and it's kind of quirky sometimes. I think they've had about 5 episodes so far in their 6th season. And sadly, I think I've read somewhere that season 6 was cut short because of the writers and actors strike, so they're only going to have 10 episodes. So they're already halfway through their season. But I've really enjoyed that season so far. I'm not sure I have anything really super specific to say. It's just been a really good season so far. Episode 2 of this season happened to be their 100th episode overall. And that episode involved a wedding. And so that was an extra special episode. I talked about that a little bit on a previous episode of our podcast. Episode 3 was the honeymoon episode, which was a little weird, but still mostly good. And the last couple episodes, again, nothing specific, but just generally good stuff happening. I do enjoy this show.
While Todd has been practicing his skill of procrastination by not editing the podcast fast enough, The Rookie has recently been officially renewed for season 7.
And then another show that's kind of like it, that also has to do with police, but also firefighters and paramedics, is 911. I've kind of gotten into that a little bit recently, at least binge watching some of the previous episodes. And I'm trying to watch what is, I think, the first few episodes of their 7th season. And I think I've been watching it too late at night because I keep falling asleep. But that also involves a honeymoon, not for a wedding that's happened recently, but for a couple who is finally getting around to having a late honeymoon. They've already been married for something like 3 or 4 years. And so I'm enjoying that show as well. Any other shows you've been watching, any or TV shows or movies or things on YouTube? I have one more to talk about, but I'll let you take a turn.
I mean, if I may, let me speak on 911. 911, for anyone that doesn't know what it is, like all I've seen is just the clips. But that looks like the most bananas show on television.
Oh, really?
Like it is legit, like Moore's Law, the roller coaster comes undone because someone didn't screw in the big bolt, and now we got to rescue the people from the roller coaster. The cruise ship's about to blow up. Oh my God, our character's on a cruise ship is about to blow up. Yeah, things just constantly go wrong on 911. But I don't know if that was 911 directly or like the spinoff 911 Dallas.
Yeah, 911 Lone Star. Now I've only seen clips of 911 Lone Star. I don't think I've seen any full episodes of that yet. But yeah, you're right. This couple that's on their honeymoon, they went on a cruise, and that must be where you got what you're talking about. That's actually from some of the current episodes. And yeah, there's like raiders show up. They're not exactly terrorists. They would be almost like modern day pirates. They show up for a little while. Then there's a bomb on board. And it's like, yeah, anywhere these people go, trouble is going to find them. But in a way, that's kind of what has to happen, because otherwise these people are just going on a honeymoon. You know, the trouble has to follow them or else it's just a soap opera. In fact, something is very similar happens to the Rookie, the season 6, episode 3, when the couple that just got married in episode 2, when they go on their honeymoon, of course, stuff has to follow them. And you know, it's like if you have police and firefighters and paramedics go somewhere, trouble has to follow them or else they're just normal people. So they get to be cops and firefighters and paramedics wherever else they go.
On 911, the honeymooning husband is a firefighter captain and the wife is a police sergeant. On The Rookie, the newlywed husband is the police officer and the bride is the firefighter.
So, which, I mean, speaks to the resiliency of these characters, yeah. Right? Like anyone that goes through half of what some of these TV show characters go through, they would just stop.
Yeah.
They would just stop doing whatever they're doing and just like leave and go do anything else beyond this job. One instance of like a house fire and like you can't save the kid, that's the rest of your life. Like if you're a firefighter and the flaming beam falls on the child, that's your whole life. There's no way you're back on the job with the soaring. No, you're in therapy.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and actually, that's a little bit of a subplot of The Rookie right now, is that one character went through something and he's trying to get back on the job and he's having to face therapy. And so, of course, to make the therapy interesting, his therapist is really hot. and they have TV. A run in outside of work and stuff like that. So,
it's TV. If you're cast on television, you are in the top 10% of looks on planet Earth. Like they don't let ugly people on TV.
Yeah.
Like Jerry Stiller got in. That's it. I would say even if you go back far enough, I'm sure Jerry Stiller was a stunningly good looking man. He just aged poorly as most people do. And, he ended up being funny enough and a good enough actor to be on every sitcom from probably Seinfeld until the day he died. I think he was also in a sitcom. But Jerry Stiller, great actor, great comedian. Serenity Now.
Serenity Now!
Oh, that's who you're talking about. Oh, Jerry Stiller. Okay, yeah, because I knew the name sounded familiar, and I was just about to look him up. But yeah, as soon as you said Serenity Now, so not Jerry's dad on Seinfeld.
Ben Stiller's dad. Costanza's dad is who he plays in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
One tells Frank Costanza what to do.
You know, I feel bad that we're not talking more about sci-fi and fantasy and superhero shows, but there aren't as many of those shows on TV right now. Even when they're on, they have short seasons, so they just don't happen to be on right now. Or they're not that good, or maybe they're good, but we just haven't started watching them. It's like the reason we're talking about stuff like The Rookie and 9-1-1 is because they're geek television is not at its peak right now. I know some people might say so because when a certain show is on, it might be the best thing in the world for those 6 to 10 episodes, those few weeks, and then it's gone. And some of those I just don't see. Like, I don't know when... that Game of Thrones spinoff. I don't know when season 2 of it comes back. I didn't watch
August.
Season
I'm one. Looking forward to that, dude.
Yeah, and I didn't watch season 1 of that.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I just didn't watch season 1.
Oh. You should. It's a good show.
Yeah, I'm done with the Game of Thrones universe. The final season of Game of Thrones.
I know. Yeah. But listen, give this a shot.
I think I'm out.
Attitude, cranky pants.
Yeah, I know. Just give it a couple episodes. Give it a couple episodes. See what you think. You got time, Todd. Yeah.
And where is season 2 of The Ark? That low-budget show that's on sci-fi that I had talked about how at first it seemed like they didn't have very original ideas. It almost seemed like they were, you know, cherry-picking. Let's take this little idea from this sci-fi show and this one and this one and this one. But then somehow by the end, they still made it their own, and they did have halfway likable characters and stuff like that. And I was like, this was like the best show of 2023, which isn't saying much. Where is season 2 of that? I'm surprised that show got renewed. And now that it is renewed, now I haven't heard anything about when it's actually coming back. And maybe it's because of the strikes that it got delayed. But let's get The Ark season 2.
At the moment, Todd is editing this portion of the podcast. It is 2 days until the 1 year anniversary of the season 1 finale airing, and 5 days after Sci-Fi announced the renewal of The Ark for season 2.
Also, let's throw a little shout out to the animated world and show some love to Invincible. Invincible season 2. It's not going to be anything Todd enjoys for sure, but it's going places, and she's here. She's finally here, and things are going to get even more violent for Invincible.
Yeah, now I did see season 1 of that, and I kind of like certain aspects of it, but it did get a little bit too dark, especially one character. And I know that, well, I don't know. I'm assuming that part of the continuing storyline is either the redemption or not redemption of this one character. And I don't know. If it is a redemption story, I could see how it would have to be a really big redemption story. But it's also, this character is so despicable that it would be so easy to get a redemption story not right with this character that it's almost like I'm just like, there's too much risk of it going wrong. And then on the other hand, if the character isn't redeemed, well, then it's just putting up with another season of nastiness. And either way, I'm just not sure I can pull the trigger on it.
That's fine. I will say if that character goes through so much. There's another character that forgives him that I don't think ever should have forgave him, but they do. And that's kind of his redemption, is him earning that forgiveness.
Mm.
If you're waiting for the moment where that character turns into Superman, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just more violent and crazy people show up to make that character look less terrible. Mm. It's just a, never-ending sliding scale of who is the worst person in the galaxy and can they come fight Invincible?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I might try that out, but I'm not ready for it yet. And sadly, there are a lot of shows like that where I did watch all of season 1, and I know that season 2 has been released of these shows, and I just, like Wheel of Time is another one I just thought of off the top of my head. I watched season 1. It was okay. I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, season 2 is out there. It might even be done by now. I still haven't pulled the trigger on it. And there are one or two other shows that are like that where I'm just, I just don't know. I need a show to impress me.
That's the thing. I really feel like we're just running into fatigue here.
Yeah.
And, you know, fatigue breeds the need for comfort. And most people, they just find a cop show and that's like mac and cheese to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd be the person diving back into things like cop shows and medical dramas and stuff like that. But I have to admit, they're actually pretty good. And I would be filling my TV time with sci-fi and fantasy, but there's just not enough to choose from. Like, for instance, another thing that I watch on a daily basis now is After Midnight with Taylor Tomlinson, the newest Late Late Show on CBS with one of my favorite comedians, Taylor Tomlinson. She's really good. I was talking with you a little bit earlier offline. She has two or three Netflix specials. And a lot of her comedy in those specials is relationship drama. And so I can't totally relate to that. But I've seen clips of her on TikTok where she does a lot of crowd work with her normal stand-up routine in smaller stand-up clubs. And she is so good at working a crowd and really improvising. And I'd like to think that that was a huge component of her getting the job hosting the show. But I was kind of hoping it would be a normal late-night talk show where she was actually interviewing famous guests and stuff like that. But instead, it's kind of a reincarnation of something that used to be called At Midnight on Comedy right. Central. And it's the type of thing where it's kind of like a game show, but it's really like a fake game show. Like all the points are kind of just randomly distributed.
Right.
And she's the host of it. And there is a talk show segment where she does ask the each of the three comedian guests a question. And a lot of the things that they joke about and a lot of things that the game show portion of it is based on has to do with social media type stuff. And I wasn't sure I would like it at first, but I'm really warming up to it. So I always look forward to I have to watch it on Paramount Plus, because I don't have cable or satellite and it's on CBS. So I have to wait and watch it the next morning, but I always look forward to that. So that's another thing that I'm watching right now.
And now that you said something, I remembered. I have gone back and I've watched one of these weird shows that exist internationally. And this one, my friend, is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Yes. What if you took R.L. Stine and Stephen King and you threw the massive ego of Donald Trump?
I beat China all the time.
Into one dude.
Mm.
And that's how you get Garth Marenghi. And that's how you get Dark Place. Yes. Dark Place is a show about the titular character, Garth Marenghi. And he is a horror novelist who wrote a bunch of books. Inexplicably, some of them get popular. And so he gets funding to make a TV show. And he's going back now and he's releasing this documentary on what he calls the most perfect show ever written by humans ever. He goes through and it's shot like you see the episode and then they cut in and they do like kind of these interview segments like The Office where they're just interviewing the people that were involved. And they give little tidbits, but it's all just setups for jokes. Like one of the episodes has Garth dealing with a child that has cancer, because this is a show about a doctor that fights the supernatural in his hospital in the middle of some town in England. And he's talking to this cancer kid, and the cancer kid gives like the, you know, I was so terrified of, you know, when I got diagnosed with cancer, I was terrified, but, you know, I'm struggling through it and it's doing great things. And I'm so happy that you're here, Garth. And he gives like this really cheery speech and he's got this big, bright smile and everything. And then it cuts the guy playing the director and he just says, I punched that child in the face.
Ooh.
Because his performance was just so awful. I just punched him right in the face.
I punched one of the child actors who was working on set because they were rude about Garth writing.
That's hilarious to me. Just so funny.
And so you say that the character is a big narcissist then?
Oh, yeah. No, the main character is the world's biggest narcissist. It shows up in the show that they made and in the cutaway segments.
Okay.
He is just the coolest person that has ever existed on Earth ever, and he is solving all the problems that have ever existed ever. So much. And he's terribly racist against Scottish people.
Wow.
And that's like a whole episode.
Very specific.
The zombies that come to attack the hospital are Scottish people, and they're like the worst absolute caricatures of Scottish people ever. And all of the cutaways to them being interviewed was just like, we were sued by the Scottish Defamation League, and personally, I think they can all just go eat some burnt haggis if they don't like what I was saying. I didn't know it was racist to say that the bagpipes were cat guts.
Welcome to all things Scottish. Our slogan is, if it's no Scottish, it's crap!
And so what was the name of that again?
That is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Okay, and I think you said what, it's on YouTube?
It's on YouTube. You know, you can Google it and find it. It was shown on Adult Swim way back.
Oh, okay.
And that's how I saw it the first time. But yeah, I just looked it up to have something running while I was doing taxes. And it's a good show. It's a solid show if you like, you know, absurdist comedy and like the whole taking overly serious horror novelists and the whole idea of the perfect guy in the perfect hospital in the perfect show. And, you know, taking him down a few pegs. You'll like this show.
I might have to give it a try. The only thing that I'm a little bit worried about is the narcissism, because we're dealing with a little bit too much narcissism in real life.
Oh, no, that's fair. Like,
you already mentioned the T word earlier.
Yeah, I can't believe we're back here again.
Yeah, I know.
The rematch no one wanted. And here we are.
Yeah.
God almighty.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
The rematch no one wanted.
Weird ass through the looking glass shit right now.
You got 3 million more votes than the guy.
I did, right.
What's the deal with the Electoral College?
I think it was for some farmer who felt that he was, his rights were going to be denied.
The Electoral College hasn't exactly been hitting it out of the park.
The Electoral College violates rule of one person, one vote.
Donald, I want you to be a good president.
He doesn't know how to do that.
Will you tell us how much you paid in federal income taxes?
Millions of dollars.
Man's practicing fuzzy math again.
George W. Bush says to me, well, that was some weird shit.
White supremacists and right
wing.
Proud boys,
stand back and stand by.
You could inject some bleach in your arm.
Well, that was some weird shit.
An anonymous.
Keep yapping, man.
I know words.
He never keeps his word.
Boom, boom, boom.
Bing, bing, bong, bong, bing, bing, bing.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it?
The worst president ever.
You are the worst thing that has happened to this country since food in buckets and maybe slavery.
Donald Trump. Freudian slip.
Be careful. Be very careful.
I will tell you this, and I said it very strongly.
Cameras all over the place.
I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care.
I'm really rich.
All talk. I'm not a nice person. And I don't care.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
The rematch no one wanted.
Here we go again.
And another thing that I don't know if nobody wanted, I certainly didn't want it, and that was some bad news that came out recently, TV related, the cancellation of the Quantum Leap revival.
I was so sad for you, Todd. I was so sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, and it's weird. I think the first season got really impressive ratings, which is why season two got greenlit so soon. And then apparently it took a turn and ratings were not good for season two. And I heard it was on the bubble, and I preferred to not even hear that news because I guess I was just being hopeful. And then all of a sudden I woke up one day, I skimmed through Facebook, and like one of the first things I even saw that day was that. And I was like, really? Internet, first thing in the morning, that's what you're going to hit me with? But yeah, the news came through that Quantum Leap is canceled. And a few other things are on the bubble, but they're things I don't watch. Like I think La Brea, I've never watched an episode of that, but supposedly it lasted 3 or 4 seasons, and I can't remember if it's coming to a natural conclusion or if it's on the bubble, but I think people are waiting on it or whatever. But anyway, yeah, Quantum Leap got canceled, and it ended on a little bit of a cliffhanger. It had a lot of good things about it. I've written I don't know if you call it an article, but like a little post about it and about some of the really good things about Quantum Leap over at medium.com. It's a site where people get to write, you know, basically whatever they want to write about and even make a little bit of money. I mean, you got to get a whole bunch of views before you even get anything. So it's not like it's super lucrative or anything, but I'm trying to increase my writing skills. So I did do a post over there listing something like 7 major reasons that I felt like Quantum Leap was doing some things right. It wasn't quite getting everything right. There are a few things it could have done a little bit better, but it was a show that definitely had potential. But as a show that only lasted two seasons, I'm wondering if you can think of any shows that you've liked before that have lasted for only two seasons, because you know me, I've got a list.
Certainly, there are a lot of animes that I've watched that have only lasted two seasons that I think are virtually perfect, but they were designed to only last two seasons. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, Cowboy Bebop stands out in my mind, and Samurai Champloo stands out in my mind, both written by Watanabe. He's a really great animator, director, and just jack of all trades in that industry. And he wrote both of those shows, and they're both really excellent. You should check them out. Another one that stands out, and it's always a debate as to whether or not it was two seasons, because there are three seasons of Batman, the animated series, but the third season has a complete redesign of all the characters and everything. Yeah. And it was released a couple of years later, and I think that was just because it took so long to work on it because of just how deep the animation was. But I consider like the first two seasons of Batman the Animated Series a different show from the third season, which I believe was also named Batman: The Adventures of Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And that was a one seasoner, and I think over the years it's just all been lumped together into one show. Another two-season wonder in that same vein is Justice League Unlimited. That was a great show. It ends great, as is the Justice League animated show. That's a really wonderful show that has one of the best endings of all of TV, I think.
Yeah, okay. Now, I know what you're talking about because I watched those. And in a way, Justice League Unlimited is just a continuation of Justice League.
I would say they're two separate shows because not only are there brand new intros and everything, but it's a focus on a whole new set of characters.
Yeah.
Like Unlimited brings in the extended Marvel
DC
universe and the focus on Huntress and Green Arrow, Black Canary, The Question, Booster Gold, you know, the standalone Booster Gold episode that I hold up as one of the best episodes of TV ever.
Wikipedia agrees with Preston that Justice League and Justice League Unlimited are considered two separate shows. Justice League lasted two seasons, with 26 episodes per season. Unlimited lasted three seasons, but with only 13 episodes per season, and it premiered approximately 2 months after the first show ended. Both shows have Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, and Hawkgirl as their core seven characters. But Unlimited greatly expands the cast to have other rotating characters, including the five Preston already mentioned, plus Supergirl, The Atom, Captain Atom, Dr. Fate, Aquaman, Stargirl, Zatanna, and even more. Unlimited was the eighth and final show in the DC animated universe, sometimes called the Timverse, with Bruce Timm's show running six of the eight series. The DCAU also included Batman, Superman, The New Batman Adventures, Batman Beyond, Static Shock, The Zeta Project, and the first Justice League series, all totaling 20 seasons, with between 11 and 65 episodes per season.
But yeah, no, that's what really sticks out to me. I'm sure there are more. Twin Peaks, I believe, was a two-season wonder, maybe.
Twin Peaks did originally last for two seasons, from 1990 to 1991, on ABC. It then had a prequel film in 1992, and then an 18-episode revival, in 2017, on Showtime.
But that was a good show, and as I say, Twin Peaks, I was like, oh, yes, that's why you're like this.
Yeah, I've heard some things about that show, but I've never watched it.
Twin Peaks is very much like Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared.
Oh.
It's one of those things where if you sit down and you watch it and you immediately don't get it, yeah, it'll be, you just go ahead and cut it off. Don't even try to get into the mystery. Who killed Laura Palmer? Who cares who killed Laura Palmer in your mind? But no, Twin Peaks is a great kind of detective noir, psychedelic, crazy mystery out of the mind of David Lynch, one of our great auteurs here in America, who is an absolute crazy person. He has a daily YouTube show where at some point in every episode he reads today's numbers. No one knows what they mean, No one knows why he does it. He just started doing it. And everyone's like, these are David Lynch's numbers for the day. And it's because everyone thinks David Lynch has a meaning to everything he does, but I don't know. I don't know if he does, because Netflix, this is how brilliant David Lynch is at making money. He got Netflix to give him something like $1 million to make something. They just said, here, David, here's like $1 million, $2 million, make something. What does he do? He gets an actor and he gets them in a room and he gets a black and white camera and he films the actor interrogating a monkey about a murder. And then he takes the monkey's mouth off and puts his own mouth in and delivers the monkey's lines himself.
Wait, it takes his mouth off?
Through digital editing, he takes the monkey's mouth off and puts his own mouth on the monkey's face.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so it's David Lynch delivering the monkey's lines as this detective is interrogating the monkey about a murder or, you know, money laundering or something. And he got like $1 million and some from Netflix to do this. Absolute wow. Genius.
Okay. What, it wasn't David Lynch the director of the 1984 Dune movie?
I think he was. He's on record as saying, they didn't give me enough money. I couldn't do my full vision. What you see there is just barely on the surface of what I was trying to do.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to take credit for it. And I believe in the official opening credits to the movie, the director is listed as, I can't remember the name, but it's the Alan Smithy, the standard name that's used for any director who doesn't want to take credit for his own work.
Yeah, because they apparently the studio was really monkeying with everything he was doing. And, you know, I can't remember if it was Sting that he didn't like. I think it was Sting that gave him a lot of trouble with direction, because Sting's in that movie and he's terrible. And David was like, God, you're terrible. Can I get another guy? No, you can't get another guy. It's Sting. He's one of the biggest rock and roll stars in the world. Well, give him a guitar and let him do what he's going to do. He can't act. Don't make me try to make him try to act. Yeah, but it's Sting. He's a gigantic star. It'll draw money. It'll draw flies. Because it's a pilot. Oh, but yeah, David Lynch did not like the Dune movie.
Yeah, and neither did I. On this podcast, I'm on record as calling it hot, wet garbage. Yeah, that's what I call it. Yeah. All right, so we still haven't heard from Dave, so I don't know if there's a second episode. So are you okay going a little bit long on this one?
Let's go.
Okay, all right. So still talking about Two Season Wonders then. I have a list, but I don't know if any of these are ones that you would be interested in. So I don't know. Is it okay for me to go through them real quick?
Yeah, just knock them out.
Okay.
Someday, Todd is going to learn that his lists are never as quick as he thinks. Who am I kidding? He's never going to learn, because he's a doofus. Since Todd and Preston go on about two-season TV shows for a half hour, this is a good place to break between parts 1 and 2. In part 2, Todd will talk about the new Discord server and his Star Trek challenge. If you'd like to force Todd to watch and review any episode of Star Trek that he has access to, even if it's from one of the shows he doesn't like, join the Discerning Geeks portal, Discord server, and post the request in the Star Trek channel. Or, email your request to discerninggeeks@gmail.com. Either way, include the name of the Star Trek series, the season, and the episode title. Todd will review the episode in both podcast form, and in written form on Discord, and at medium.com. Until next time, be well, be safe, stay tuned for part 2 of Todd and Preston's Drive Time number 6, and continue to enjoy whatever makes you a discerning geek. Thank goodness Todd finally stopped giving me more things to say. This bottle of Chardonnay isn't going to day drink itself.